Welcome to Players Next Live. I'm Rob Jeske, and glad to share this time with you today. Before we roll into our inaugural show and welcome our first guest, I wanted to take a few moments to share my journey in youth sports over the past 40 years. During my school years, I was a multi-sport athlete, fortunate to receive D1 offers in all three sports. My college career was derailed by some recruiting decisions and an untimely injury, and I later went on to compete professionally on golf's mini tours. Following those diverse experiences, I channeled my passion for youth sports into building a junior golf program that helped produce more than 50 D1 college players, many of whom went on to compete professionally. And finally, for the past decade, I have lived the roller coaster youth sports parent experience, guiding and supporting my three children that compete in multiple sports at a very high level. So what is Players Next and Players Next Live all about? Over the past 25 years, youth sports has experienced unprecedented growth. As the needs of aspiring players and parents grew more complex, the market produced fragmented solutions, leaving families chasing an array of hit-or-miss options. Today, the youth sports community still lacks an accessible resource that delivers families the impartial information, guidance, tools, and support necessary to succeed. In collaboration with experienced athletes, coaches, parents, Players Next has developed a blueprint for that solution. Players Next, and what we hope will be a long tenure of informative radio shows and podcasts, represents the start of our journey to help build a better future for this wonderful world of youth sports. Before we welcome our first guest, I would like to express my sincere thanks to the WCHL team and our early sponsors for supporting this quest. Today's show is made possible by Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer specializing in golf and sports turf equipment solutions for more than 50 years. Revels Turf and Tractor is proud to support the UNC, Duke, NC State, and Durham Bulls field maintenance crews, as well as provide its innovative North Carolina signature field program, designed to deliver much-needed support to area high school facilities. We invite you to learn more about Revels at revelstractor.com. Our other sponsor for this show is Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks. Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks were designed to help kids eat right and do well in school. Their snacks are all natural and loaded with learning, education in every bite. Dick and Jane Educational Snacks are available at Amazon. Just simply search Educational Snacks. So here we go. We are honored to have Matt West join us today as our inaugural guest on the Players Next Live show. Matt West grew up as a multi-sport athlete and baseball star in Southern California. After graduating from Long Beach State, Matt went on to enjoy a successful career in the major leagues as a pitcher for the Atlanta Braves and Seattle Mariners. Following his playing days, Matt successfully transitioned to the business side of sports, first leading the sales and marketing team for the Durham Bulls. Matt later migrated across town to serve as a member of the executive committee for the Carolina Hurricanes and running the team's sales, marketing, and promotional organization. Along the way, Matt has given much time to youth sports and, most importantly, enjoyed watching his three children excel as student athletes. Without further ado, Matt, welcome as our first guest on Players Next Live. And we're here today to talk to you a little bit about your experience in sports, your illustrious baseball career, and obviously connect that with what's happening in the youth sports world. So welcome, Matt.
Rob, thank you. I'm honored to be here on the inaugural show, and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the word illustrious about my baseball career, but I'm excited to be here and be with you and have an opportunity to talk sports with our listeners.
Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And our goal on this show is to hopefully provide meaningful insights to aspiring athletes, their families, organizations engaged in youth sports. So we've got a series of questions here that we've put together along with some listener questions from around the marketplace. We'll start out with looking back on your youth sports days in California, Matt. How does today's youth sports experience look and feel different from your experience many years ago?
Well, Rob, I think at first blush, having three daughters whom are all competitive athletes, it's kept me close to sports. But I think they're very different. Of course, I'm 57 years old, so I played back when there were dinosaurs on the planet. I don't think parents were as connected or as engaged or involved in both the process of getting their son or daughter signed up for an activity, they weren't as involved in the actual, I think, attendance of games, or the proverbial riding your bike to the Little League field has been replaced by the carpool and the constant dropping off of children at their various sports activities. So I think that maybe to sum it up, I don't think it was as organized and don't think it was as engaged. But I also know that some of the things we'll talk about today lead to the fact that further organization is necessary if we really want to be able to provide parents and kids with the best pathway forward.
That's a great observation, Matt, because you and I have talked in other forums about the loss of the sandlot and pickup sports activity that we grew up on, and the freedom to try things and experiment in your particular sport. And today, with the constant structure of you must do these drills and then you play in these games and that produces this sort of path, I think that's really impacted today's kids. And how would you share some of your experience as a kid, you know, that sandlot experience or pickup experience versus what a lot of today's kids are doing?
Well, Rob, I think that you kind of pulled the curtain back by your comment about sandlot or kids going out and playing in their yards and playing out in the street and probably many things that parents today would not accept either for safety reasons or what have you. And so I think maybe one of the first points of reference or points of light would be, you know, my generation was more apt to play them all and be less focused around focusing in on one sport very early. And when I say very early, you know, at 12 or 13 or 14 years old or even younger. So, you know, I played football, basketball, baseball, tennis, golf, you know, played them all. And it was much more seasonal. And I think that there was a form of cross-training with that dynamic, which perhaps, I'm saying perhaps, created less of a chance of burnout. It created more of a chance. There was almost a cross-training element. You know, when you were a basketball player and you were guarding someone, that was not unlike you getting ready to field a ground ball off the bat or potentially run a route if you're a wide receiver in football. So there was more seasonality. I think there was potentially less professional instruction back then or less focused instruction, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the instruction today is better than it was. I just think there's probably more of it or more of an emphasis on parents getting access to professional coaching for their children at an earlier age. Anecdotally, and then I'll let you comment, anecdotally, I think that some of that instruction that parents are faced with today or weeding through where to send my son or daughter is a very precarious decision because there are so many options. And there's probably not a place or an album, if you will, that the parent can go and look and listen and really get a feel for what their son or daughter is best suited to do or take advantage of.
That's great. Terrific insight, Matt. We're going to have to take our first break. We'll be right back. All right, well, welcome back. We're here with Matt West, former Major League Baseball pitcher and local entrepreneur and leader in the youth sports and sports market here in the Carolinas. So, Matt, love that story about Andre Dawson. Remember him well as a player and watching through the years. And you know, it made me think during the break that that one-on-one battle between pitcher and the hitter is such a unique part of baseball and really compared to any other place in sports. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about that, the psyche between that mano-a-mano, one-on-one approach between a pitcher and hitter and some of that experience.
Well, Rob, again, thanks to Ryder for his question. And that question is probably very easy for me to answer. When you think when you drive back into where I spent most of my time as a minor league player, which is at the AAA level, just below the major league level, you have a tendency to face some of the same guys for, you know, two or three years at a time, and you get very familiar with them, and that can be a very positive situation for a pitcher. I can get familiar with a guy and know how to get him out, or it can be the opposite. And I remember a right-handed hitter with the Cleveland Indians organization named Junior Noboa. Right-handed hitter, And all the way through my career with the Braves organization, and also when I was in AAA with Seattle my last year, it was almost as if Jimmy DeBoer was following me around or stalking me. And I just had a really, really difficult time getting him out. And, you know, I had a fastball, curveball, slider, and change, and I could have had 15 other pitches, and he hit all of them. So he owned me. That's the moniker that people put on each other when they have a tough time, is he owned me. And I haven't seen Junior in probably 20 years, 30 years, but I'm sure that if I did see him, the first thing he would tell me, he'd thank me, because I'm sure that I helped his batting average.
Great. Excellent. Excellent answer. Well, switching topics a little bit, one of the things that we wanted to share for our listeners and the Players Next community is having reached the pinnacle of baseball and like other athletes in other sports, what's some advice that you would give to aspiring players and parents with these lofty ambitions? Obviously, many kids go to bed at night dreaming of being a pro and making it to the Hall of Fame and whatever their endeavor is, and even more kids aspire to play in college. But, you know, given that road and given what you've gone through, how would you help sort of paint a sort of a psychological roadmap to help our listeners maybe navigate both the physical and emotional road that they're about to go embark on?
Well, first of all, great question and an important question, Rob. You know, when I think back on my career all the way up to today, when I'm a parent of three track and field athletes, I think the lessons that I pay most attention to now is the answer to your question, which is, I think it's much more about the mental approach. It's much more about how you compete. And probably the most important thing I can share with a young athlete is how you recover from failure, because you are going to fail. You know, we think about baseball and we think about a successful major league hitter is successful only 3 out of 10 times. And those guys are making lots of money failing. But the reality of it is, in any sport, success is easy, meaning handling that can be fairly easy. But then as soon as the ship turns in the opposite direction and you struggle, that's probably the sign of the best athletes. You know, you went back to the question that you asked Cal Ripken, and I'll maybe say it a different way. I look for the players who can recover quickly from failure. And nobody did that better, as I bounced around on the answer, Rob. Nobody did that better for me when I was a player than Tommy Glavine, because Glavine could be out of sorts. And he might be going 102-0 on every hitter, and you knew if he was doing that, he was really struggling. But he never showed it to you, and he didn't compound things. If he walked a guy, he wouldn't walk two in a row. He would be able to make that adjustment and correction and recover. And so I would share this back to our young athletes, is pay particular attention to how you handle things when you're struggling. And maybe even deeper, Rob, is the best way I know how to do that is have a video in your mind of how you do things when you're successful, and play that tape over and over in your mind. And when you're struggling, continue to play that tape and try to get focused on that tape and not focus on what you're doing wrong, but try to get yourself back to that visual point when you were successful.
Well, I completely agree, and I think one of the topics you brought up earlier and we discussed was the lack of just playing for fun and pick up or sandlot type of experiences. And I think in our generation, we had the opportunity to, failure wasn't a big deal. You know, you're hanging out with your friends and, you know, playing on the sandlot or the schoolyard basketball court, and you just played for fun and maybe had a little trash talk. And in today's world, every time they put on their uniform and walk between the lines, there seems to be such a high degree of pressure. Parents who have invested time and money, and the kids feel that, and the coaches that are trying to build a great program. So I think that's an excellent point for our members of the Players Next community and our listeners is to understand that learning how to deal with adversity, sometimes it's just getting out there and playing and learning how to play the game and not worrying about the outcome so much.
Well, and Rob, if we have time for a little bit of a follow-up, and you be sure to stop me if I get going too long, is the whole point of reference for me is I don't think there was as much emphasis on thinking that any of us who were going to play in the big leagues, from the parental side or from the coaching side or from the organizational side when we were kids. That said, you made the comment earlier in your question about kids dreaming, and you want kids to dream. You want them to dream about playing in Yankee Stadium. I had the good fortune of being in New York this last weekend, and I walked over and took a peek at Yankee Stadium, and it's great to dream. I just want to make sure that they know that most of us, if not all of us, are going to have the uniform taken away from us at some point in time, and we're going to have to go to work. And sports can be a great place where you develop great habits that you can deploy in the workplace. That sounds like a mouthful for a young athlete right now. So play as long as you can. Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy the game, the joy of it. But don't take it too seriously, and don't put too much pressure on yourself.
That's I love that response, and it's share a little insight into my family. I often tell my kids as we're heading out to a Saturday and Sunday of baseball tournament or soccer or basketball, and I'll often say to my kids that go have fun, because you have no idea how much money or what I would do to have one more chance to put on a uniform and lace them up and go play between the lines. So it's I couldn't agree more that that kind of spirit and that kind of energy is what families and coaches need to be instilling on our kids, and let the rest take care of itself. One other, I know we've got a break coming up here in about a minute or so, but one quick question. When do you, a caller from Jack 11 from Carrboro was curious about, when's the right time, in your opinion, to start adding weight room and serious training? And is that an individual question, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that is a great question, and Jack, it's probably an individual question. I think that no two of us are exactly the same. I think that sometimes rules are made just so we can put everybody in a pen and manage the process a little bit easier. But I will tell you that playing the game, playing the actual activity at a young age is more important than being in the weight room and trying to build physical strength. I think that comes with time. I don't say that because I didn't do it. Even though I did not, I didn't lift weights to any degree until I got into the latter stages of high school. And even back when I was in high school, was not a big priority, especially for a baseball player. Certainly football players were in the gym, but the baseball players and other athletes were not. I would put the time in to being flexible. So as much as we all probably dislike stretching, if I had to do it all over again, I would put a larger focus on my flexibility as an athlete, especially as I started to grow and get taller. And secondarily, the time that you might be putting into weightlifting probably could be time that you're focusing on honing your skills for the sport that you're involved in. Because, kids today, Rob, as you know, being a dad and me a dad, they're busy. They're busy with school and homework and volunteer activities, and then there's their sport. I'm not trying to be vague, because that could be start at 13, could be start at 17.
No, that's a great answer, and it is an individual decision. So we're coming up on another break. This is the Players Next Show. We'll be right back with Matt West. All right, well, welcome back. We're here with Matt West, former Major League Baseball pitcher and local entrepreneur and leader in the youth sports and sports market here in the Carolinas. So, Matt, love that story about Andre Dawson. Remember him well as a player and watching through the years. And it made me think during the break that that one-on-one battle between pitcher and the hitter is such a unique part of baseball and really compared to any other place in sports. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about that, the psyche between that mano-a-mano, one-on-one approach between a pitcher and hitter and some of that experience.
Well, Rob, again, thanks to Ryder for his question. And that question is probably very easy for me to answer. When you drive back into where I spent most of my time as a minor league player, which is at the AAA level, just below the major league level, you have a tendency to face some of the same guys for, you know, 2 or 3 years at a time, and you get very familiar with them, and that can be a very positive situation for a pitcher. I can get familiar with a guy and know how to get him out, or it can be the opposite. And I remember a right-handed hitter with the Cleveland Indians organization named Junior Noboa, right-handed hitter, and all the way through my career with the Braves organization, and also when I was in AAA with Seattle my last year, it was almost as if Junior Noboa was following me around or stalking me. And I just had a really, really difficult time getting him out. And, you know, I had a fastball, curveball, slider, and change. And I could have had 15 other pitches, and he hit all of them. So he owned me. That's the moniker that people put on each other when they have a tough time, is he owned me. And I haven't seen Junior in probably 20 years, 30 years, but I'm sure that if I did see him, the first thing he would tell me, he'd thank me, because I'm sure that I helped his batting average.
Great. Excellent, excellent answer. Well, switching topics a little bit, one of the things that we wanted to share for our listeners and the Players Next community is having reached the pinnacle of baseball and like other athletes in other sports, what's some advice that you would give to aspiring players and parents with these lofty ambitions? Obviously, many kids go to bed at night dreaming of being a pro and making it to the Hall of Fame and whatever their endeavor is, and even more kids aspire to play in college. But, you know, given that road and given what you've gone through, how would you help sort of paint a sort of a psychological roadmap to help our listeners maybe navigate both the physical and emotional road that they're about to go embark on?
Well, first of all, great question and an important question, Rob. You know, when I think back on my career all the way up to today, when I'm a parent of three track and field athletes, I think the lessons that I pay most attention to now is the answer to your question, which is, I think it's much more about the mental approach. It's much more about how you compete. And probably the most important thing I can share with a young athlete is how you recover from failure, because you're going to fail. You know, we think about baseball and we think about a successful major league hitter is successful only 3 out of 10 times. And those guys are making lots of money failing. But the reality of it is, in any sport, success is easy, meaning handling that can be fairly easy. But then as soon as the ship turns in the opposite direction and you struggle, that's probably the sign of the best athletes. You know, you went back to the question that you asked Cal Ripken, and I'll maybe say it a different way. I look for the players who can recover quickly from failure. And nobody did that better, as I bounced around on the answer, Rob. Nobody did that better for me when I was a player than Tommy Glavine, because Glavine could be out of sorts. And he might be going 1-0, 2-0 on every hitter, and you knew if he was doing that, he was really struggling. But he never showed it to you, and he didn't compound things. If he walked a guy, he wouldn't walk two in a row. He would be able to make that adjustment and correction and recover. And so I would share this back to our young athletes, is pay particular attention to how you handle things when you're struggling. And maybe even deeper, Rob, is the best way I know how to do that is have a video in your mind of how you do things when you're successful, and play that tape over and over in your mind. And when you're struggling, continue to play that tape and try to get focused on that tape and not focus on what you're doing wrong, but try to get yourself back to that visual point when you were successful.
Well, I completely agree, and I think one of the topics you brought up earlier and we discussed was the lack of just playing for fun and pick up or sandlot type of experiences. And I think in our generation, we had the opportunity to, failure wasn't a big deal. You know, you're hanging out with your friends and, you know, playing on the sandlot or the schoolyard basketball court, and you just played for fun and maybe had a little trash talk. And in today's world, every time they put on their uniform and walk between the lines, there seems to be such a high degree of pressure. Parents who have invested time and money, and the kids feel that, and the coaches that are trying to build a great program. So I think that's an excellent point for our members of the Players Next community and our listeners is to to understand that, you know, learning how to deal with adversity, sometimes it's just getting out there and playing and learning how to play the game and not worrying about the outcome so much.
Well, and Rob, if we have time for a little bit of a follow-up, and you be sure to stop me if I get going too long, is the whole point of reference for me is I don't think there was as much emphasis on thinking that any of us who were going to play in the big leagues from the parental side or from the coaching side or from the organizational side when we were kids. That said, you made the comment earlier in your question about kids dreaming, and you want kids to dream. You want them to dream about playing in Yankee Stadium. I had the good fortune of being in New York this last weekend, and I walked over and took a peek at Yankee Stadium, and it's great to dream. I just want to make sure that they know that most of us, if not all of us, are going to have the uniform taken away from us at some point in time, and we're going to have to go to work. And sports can be a great place where you develop great habits that you can deploy in the workplace. That sounds like a mouthful for a young athlete right now. So play as long as you can. Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy the game, the joy of it. But don't take it too seriously and don't put too much pressure on yourself.
That's I love that response, and it's share a little insight into my family. I often tell my kids as we're heading out to a Saturday and Sunday of baseball tournament or soccer or basketball, and I'll often say to my kids that go have fun, because you have no idea how much money or what I would do to have one more chance to put on a uniform and lace them up and go play between the lines. So it's I couldn't agree more that that kind of spirit and that kind of energy is what families and coaches need to be instilling on our kids, and let the rest take care of itself. One other, I know we've got a break coming up here in about a minute or so, but one quick question. When do you, a caller from Jack 11 from Carrboro was curious about, when's the right time, in your opinion, to start adding weight room and serious training? And is that an individual question, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that is a great question, and Jack, it's probably an individual question. I think that no two of us are exactly the same. I think that sometimes rules are made just so we can put everybody in a pen and manage the process a little bit easier. But I will tell you that playing the game, playing the actual activity at a young age is more important than being in the weight room and trying to build physical strength. I think that comes with time. I don't say that because I didn't do it. Even though I did not, I didn't lift weights to any degree until I got into the latter stages of high school. And even that, back in, when I was in high school, was not a big priority, especially for a baseball player. Certainly football players were in the gym, but the baseball players and other athletes were not. I would put the time in to be flexible. So as much as we all probably dislike stretching, if I had to do it all over again, I would put a larger focus on my flexibility as an athlete, especially as I started to grow and get taller. And secondarily, the time that you might be putting into weightlifting probably could be time that you're focusing on honing your skills for the sport that you're involved in. Because, kids today, Rob, as you know, being a dad and me a dad, they're busy. They're busy with school and homework and volunteer activities, and then there's their sport. I'm not trying to be vague, because it could be start at 13, it could be start at 17.
No, that's a great answer, and it is an individual decision. So we're coming up on another break. This is the Players Next Show. We'll be right back with Matt West. Okay, welcome back, listeners. This is the Players Next Show. Today we're joined by Matt West, former Major League Baseball pitcher and local entrepreneur and youth sports patron. Matt, I thought I'd take one more question from our listeners. We have Carol, a mom in Durham. Her question was, we feel pressure for our daughter to specialize in one sport. And you and I talked about that earlier in the show. What are your thoughts about specialization? Is there a right time? And is there a benefit for complementing sports?
Well, Carol, great question. It's on the minds of all of us parents, so you should not feel alone in that. And my answer is probably not going to be magical, but I'll try to put it through two lenses, the lenses of a sports person and the lens of a parent. Most importantly, as a parent, I really have taken the stance with our daughters who run track that I'm a cheerleader. I'm the bus driver. I'm the snack provider. I'm all the things, and I want them to just in the track vernacular, I just want them to enjoy running and enjoy competing, enjoy being a part of the team and the camaraderie, the ability to work with a team and with other people. Those are skills they're going to have to do later. The specialization piece from both the parental side and the sports insider or coach side, I think that the burnout rate that I see or people just not being able to enjoy the sport is rather disheartening, so I would resist that. If I had a son, which I do not, Rob, that's Rob's department, but if I had a son that was playing baseball, if I had a daughter playing softball, I would resist the tendency to have them just play that one sport, and part of it's because of burnout, and part of it's because it's really fun to play the other sport. And once they decide to specialize, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, and they end up not having an opportunity to play that other sport. And depending on how old your daughter is, you may be taking away an opportunity for your daughter to play something that she may indeed end up being better at than the sport that you're feeling pressured to have her focus in on. So it's not an easy answer. But I wish that more kids were allowed to play all of them longer. And I think that, quite frankly, they'd be better athletes if they were allowed to do that.
That's an excellent response, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think one of the opportunities, as you pointed out, how many athletes have we seen who were focused or seen to have potential in one sport, and 5 years later they were playing at a high level at a completely different sport? The Major League Baseball, the PGA Tour, the NFL are filled with many examples like that. One question, that I was curious about, it's kind of the age-old baseball question, but, you know, you hear conversations about arms and arm maintenance, and with your experience in baseball, you know, has the perception of when to throw a curveball and when to start experimenting with other pitches, has that changed from when you and I were growing up?
Well, it probably has. I think that I point to the fact that I don't know how many years ago it was that John Smoltz was inducted in the Hall of Fame, but he digressed in his Hall of Fame speech to talk about the fact that Tommy John surgery is not natural. So he went on record as saying that, the fact that we have kind of specialized kids and made them throw sliders and curveballs and forkballs very early in the process in the name of not just getting hitters out, but in the name of getting drafted. Getting signed and then playing. Probably the best story I can tell, which will answer the question more succinctly, is my focus when I look at a young pitcher or a young player, if I'm looking at someone who's throwing a baseball, you got to pay attention to proper body mechanics, and you got to be able to look for people who get it done easily. And that's true of probably any sport. When you see someone who it takes a lot of effort or someone who's really stressed when they're performing the activity in whatever, since we're talking about baseball and a thrower, I'd be paying more attention to pitchers that are struggling and stressed, and their effort level is very high for them to throw. I'd be working on reducing that effort level through improving their mechanics, and I wouldn't pay any attention to them adding another pitch. The other side of that is that most of the kids who want to add a curveball or a slider or a forkball or whatever are doing so before they've perfected the ability to command their fastball. And I think command of the fastball should be treated as a premium well before anybody wants to add another pitch. I am from the subscriber base that says the fastball is the best pitch in baseball and always will be, because it's the only pitch that you can throw effectively to any location and get a positive outcome. you're not going to throw a curveball up and in on somebody, and but you can throw a fastball up and in and get a desired result. You can throw a fastball down and in, but you might not want to throw a breaking ball down and in to a left-handed hitter if you're a right-hander. So really what that means is I'm preaching about the fact that have your son or daughter spend more time focused on than on number one and getting absolute command of number one, and that's the only time that you start adding a pitch, and that pitch should probably be a changeup.
That's a great answer, and thank you. And having been a catcher for all of my years in baseball, I can tell you it's much easier to enjoy a pitcher working on the command of his fastball than all this breaking stuff that's bouncing all over the batter's box and areas beyond. So,
Rob, if you can give me the latitude to tell a quick story.
I'd love to.
This will make sense to the viewer. So if I were to say to the person that asked a question about when to throw a curveball or a slider or a forkball, I'd say, let me ask you a question. If I put you in the backseat of my car and I was driving the car and I pushed on the accelerator and then slammed on the brake and I turned the wheel from side to side and I pushed on the gas pedal and slammed on the brake, what am I really doing? I'm making you uncomfortable in the backseat. That's what pitchers should be looking to do with hitters, is to make them uncomfortable. And really what I talked about there was the change of speed and the change of location. There wasn't anything about a breaking ball or a forkball or a slider. So a fastball and a changeup can make someone uncomfortable from a speed perspective, back and forth, tapping the brake, tapping the accelerator, and you can move the ball in and out, which means you're turning the steering wheel.
If
I put somebody in the back seat and did that, I'd make them uncomfortable, and that is the key to being a successful pitcher, is to make that hitter uncomfortable.
Well, that's the golden nugget right there, Matt, and we're coming up on our time being done for today, so I appreciate you greatly for taking the time, sharing your insights about youth sports, your experiences in baseball, and as we try and build this community within Players Next and the WCHL listeners, we as our first host, you'll always be a legend, and thank you for your time, and we hope to have you back on the show soon.
Rob, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, Matt. As we wrap up our first show, I want to once again give special thanks to our guest, Matt West, for joining us today, sharing his journey through California, up through a variety of sports and youth sports, on into the major leagues, and then on to his experiences as a parent. And that really brings me to our mission with Players Next, which is really to try and create a community of players, parents, coaches, organizations involved in youth sports, not just here in the Carolinas, but around the country, and hopefully one day around the world, and get people talking about how can we better serve the kids, better serve the sports and ambitions that they're pursuing, and make the experience a happy and healthy one for everyone involved. There's clearly a huge amount of investment going on, time, money, physical resources, and I think the time has come for all of us to talk about youth sports, get together and share experiences and best practices, and that's what we hope to start with this show. So before we leave, I want to once again thank our sponsors, Revels Turf and Tractor, your local John Deere dealer, and their exciting new Signature Field program benefiting North Carolina high schools. I also once again would like to thank Dick and Jane's Educational Snacks, healthy, fun snacks for lunch, after school, classroom parties, and even at halftime. I also wanted to take a moment to once again thank the great team here at WCHL for all their support in making this a possibility. And most of all, I want to thank you, our listeners, for not only joining us today, but for the time all of you put into supporting kids, supporting your kids, and how that in the long term benefits our community. So with that, we hope you enjoyed our first show, you found it interesting and informative, and look forward to you joining us again in the near future. And as we say every day at Players Next, remember, it's your dream.